By mid-afternoon, with a bit of jury-rigging and the generous donations of locals, Fisher and the Lyugs had completed their metamorphosis of the school. They'd pulled together teachers' desks to function as operating tables. They'd collected dozens of spare bed linens and hung blankets over the windows to keep out the bluebottle flies and the glare. The hospital was as ready as it was ever going to be, the packets of morphine and gauze and syringes arrayed on side tables, containers of plasma carefully stockpiled, scalpels sparkling in the guttering light of coconut oil lamps. Dr. Fisher had decided he would personally participate in the raid, crawling along with everyone else to the very threshold of the prison. This was a bit unorthodox. Many other battalion surgeons would have chosen to stay at the hospital and wait for the medics to bring the casualties in. Musi didn't like it at all. "You're crazy, Jimmy," Musi told him. "This is a raid. We can't have you in there." Musi argued that Fisher's skills were far too important to risk on the line, that an injured surgeon wouldn't be of much use to the company in its hour of greatest need. But the doctor turned Musi's argument on its head. Fisher thought he should go along precisely because this was such a dangerous mission. He felt strongly that he'd be needed right from the start, at the gate, in situ. Moreover, Fisher doubted whether his small team of four medical corpsmen could handle the job if casualties mounted. He felt his expertise might be crucial in helping to stabilize patients and save lives outside the compound. There was also the question of the POWs themselves. "You've got 500 prisoners in there. Many of them are terribly ill and might require special medical attention from the outset," Fisher told Musi. Then, too, Fisher contended, Dr. Lyug and his wife were more than qualified to stay in Platero and staff the hospital while he was out in the field. Fisher was persuasive, and ultimately Musi relented. The young surgeon's stubbornness on this point reflected something of his character. Ever since he joined the Rangers in New Guinea, he'd consistently been the kind of soft-spoken, self-deprecating doctor who expected to be treated the same as everyone else, to march the same marches, to venture out on the same patrols, to get himself into the same physical shape as his Ranger comrades. He hated the pretentiousness typical of so many Army surgeons, and always insisted that even the greenest of enlisted men address him simply as Dr. Jimmy. Perhaps it was in part his way of compensating for his Harvard medical education and his privileged upbringing as the son of the popular Vermont writer and educator Dorothy Canfield Fisher, one of the charter committee members of the Book of the Month Club. With 5 o'clock fast approaching, Dr. Fisher hurriedly pulled together a rucksack of emergency medical supplies and waited for Colonel Musi's signal to march.